For an even better way to listen to Football Weekly at home, at work or on the go, head to soundcloud.com/Guardian Football Weekly or download the SoundCloud app for Android and iPhone.
Football Weekly Extra.
Today, departure of Nani sees Fergie throw toys out of pram as Madrid game leaves United real mad. The pod asks, worst Nani decision since she marries that old Austrian in The Sound of Music? And what of Rooney? And Moo does modesty? Who knew? We round up the week's other winners, PSG, Juventus, Dortmund, then move on. There's the Premier League, Liverpool, Spurs showdown. Big action at the bottom too. FA Cup, the quarterfinals. We enjoy Sean's big tip, your posts and tweets, and so much more in today's Football Weekly Extra. All right. Hi, everybody. Interesting. Interesting pod today. Interesting pod lineup today. Tom Lutz.
Hello.
You've got an ironic smile in your face.
Yeah.
What are you ironically smiling about?
I was just seeing Sean scribbling away. I was wondering what you were scribbling.
What are you
at the last?
It is Sean Ingle.
Hello, James. How are you?
I'm very well, Sean. You don't write. You don't call.
You don't. I've been waiting for the text.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? Okay. Well, anyway, you because you had that ankle issue.
I had that ankle issue.
Van Basten-esque.
I did, yeah. It's almost better, but I still haven't.
Right.
I went running with my wife the other day. My wife's actually sort of wants to break an hour and a half for the half marathon.
Okay.
And yeah, she just ran into the distance. I couldn't keep up with her anymore.
Right. Okay. Don't try, Sean. Don't try. That's my advice. And joining us for the first time ever, it's actual pod debutee. And these things usually go really well, Ian, so don't feel any pressure at all. Ian McIntosh.
Hello.
Hi, Ian. I say WT, but of course you're all over that pod business yourself, aren't you?
Once a member of the now defunct Red, White and Blue podcast.
Right. It's the best way to be a defunct podcast, isn't it?
It was. We had glorious moments. We didn't overstay our welcome.
Exactly. You knew when to get out.
Exactly.
Right. Hey, I tell you who's not outstaying their welcome. Man United in Europe. How about that? They are out after the Real Madrid clash on Tuesday. Everyone's talking about it. A terrific game ruined when one man's decision robbed United of a key player. But do you think the Rooney, leaving Rooney out, was that... Yeah, did he drop the wrong forward?
No, I think he got his tactics absolutely right.
Right.
The decision to have Welbeck pulling back and dealing with Alonso was perfectly vindicated by what happened in the, first 57 minutes. It wasn't one of Van Persie's better games, but he still, I think, had five chances. For the better part of the hour, everything was going absolutely according to plan. And then, kabam, red card and instant collapse.
Well, it's interesting how this has polarised debate, really. So many people saying that the Turkish referee's decision killed one of the greatest Champions League games ever. And, I'm frowning a bit of that too. It was a good game, though, wasn't it?
It was an excellent game.
And briefly, after the red card, it got even more exciting.
Well, it did. I think United, whatever you think about the red card, and in some ways, I think, if you remember the whole Beckham-Simeone thing back in 98, everyone sort of said at the time in England, never a red card, it was just a little thing. But now, of course, we accept that, you know, you can't do that anymore. And I wonder, I mean, I think the red card was harsh, but I wonder whether the people's instant reaction, which was not even a yellow card, they're realising actually in Europe and elsewhere that kind of incident will always get a card, whether it's yellow or red.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between yellow and red.
Of course, and I think I'd have given yellow. I thought it was a harsh decision.
All right, Tom?
It was harsh, but it wasn't ridiculous. It wasn't like Nani completely missed the opponent with his Arbeloa with his studs or anything like that.
Mm.
Yeah, it was harsh, and also I think Sean pointed out it led to a very good game. The game kind of got better after that.
Briefly, and then when Real scored, it got a lot.
But then when United had to come back and score twice, that made for a very
exciting
game.
Get a couple of listeners' thoughts on this. Big Banana Feet says the red card decision was very similar to two given by Anthony Taylor in the West Ham-Everton game not so long ago, both of which, of course, were rescinded. Sir John Terry says, well, after Demba Ba had his nose broken, not even a card by a high kick, nice to have a bit of proper reffing. Other people mentioning Peter Crouch's removal of Matt Taylor's head in the Stoke West Ham game.
I mean, a couple of quick points. Remember John Terry last year? He gets sent off against Barcelona.
Yeah.
Chelsea don't
Same
crumble.
Ref.
Yeah. So, yeah, they don't capitulate. United, for that sort of 10, 15 minutes after the goal, and they weren't themselves. And I thought they were very good the last 10 minutes, but then it was too late to do anything. So they have, even though I thought the decision was wrong, they should have responded better to that, you know, decision. They kind of, their heads were frayed, their tempers, their blood was pouring out. They had hot funk on, and they didn't defend properly after that.
I like that. They had hot funk on. Do you think, let's get into the minds of professional footballers for an instant, do you think the sight of their venerable manager turning purple and jumping up and down and bustling through like a pensioner at a bus queue? I don't know. Something like that to get to the fourth official. Do you think that in any way helped that sense of them losing their focus?
Well, in another game, in another situation, it could actually have helped kick them on. It fired up the crowd. You saw Ferguson raising his arms at the fans. The roar going around the stadium for 2 or 3 minutes afterwards was incredible. But the contrast in the other dugout, where Mourinho didn't, he was one of the only coaches there not to be kicking bins over and starting fires. He immediately looked at the pitch and thought, right, there's a really big gap there and I can stick Luka Modric in it. And the game was changed. And I don't think it was a red card. I can see where the referee was coming from, even if I wouldn't necessarily agree with it. But it wasn't strictly what cost United the game. What cost United the game was the 5-10 minutes that followed, where Real Madrid acted tactically very astutely and Manchester United went for emotion.
Do you think that 5-10 minutes might have happened anyway, even if Nani hadn't been sent off?
I don't know. You could speculate the time. I don't think so. At that time, it looked like Real Madrid were running out of ideas and United were going to close it down.
All right, well, we'll hear from Sid in a second with the Spanish view on all of this. What about United this weekend, though? They're still on for the double, as are their opponents, Chelsea, of course, the Europa League FA Cup double.
Suddenly that game takes a lot more meaning, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
For both teams. I'd say the one advantage United have is they've got injustice and that ire on their side, which might fire them on a bit more, and they've had more time to recover because Chelsea are playing in the Europa League tonight as well.
That's very true. They're going to be away at Steaua Bucharest. If you give Sean £10, he might be able to give you, what, Sean, 21,000 in return?
No.
Tell us about your extraordinary tip. I'm tempted.
No, it's not. It's not an extraordinary tip. I was just making the point that this FA Cup, a quarter final round, everyone expects the home teams to go through. And if you were to put £10 on the four away teams to win in 90 minutes with a certain bookmaker, you would get over £24,000.
Rich. We'll be rich, I tell you.
Are you putting money on?
But it won't happen. Of course I'm not.
Well, you never know. Okay, so what are we looking at here? Chelsea to win at Man United. That could happen, couldn't it?
Possibly.
Yeah, all right. Well, we'll talk about the other ones later on. £21,000, you say? Fantastic. Must say, Sean, it's refreshing to have you back. Let's have a word now about Wayne Rooney.
Well, there's been a lot of speculation in today's papers that he's going to be off, and people are looking at Beckham when he was left out of the game against Real Madrid a decade or so ago. One thing I would say is that United aren't briefing on this, and nor are Rooney's camp.
I'd heard that they were.
No, they're not briefing on them. Then officially,
when you say not briefing, explain that to the civilians.
They're not sort of giving the journalists operating in Manchester. They're not giving them a nod or a wink or saying this is what's going on behind the scenes. That wasn't the case a couple of years ago when you had all these stories about Rooney wanting to leave. And I remember at the time writing a live blog on it and people were saying this is all rubbish. Rooney doesn't want to leave. But what had happened is that Paul Stratford, Rooney's agent, had been briefing some papers, and then of course United were also briefing papers, and we weren't allowed to publish that. But that's, they were telling us basically what was going on behind the scenes. That isn't happening here. And I think what journalists are doing, it's making quite a logical leap, saying Rooney was left out of one of the biggest games of like the last 2 or 3 years, therefore he will be leaving in the summer.
All right, now the spin I'd heard on this was twofold. One, about 10 days ago, when the stories about Paris Saint-Germain having an interest in Rooney first surfaced, the kind of informed word was those stories didn't come from Paris, they came from Man United, who were actually already trying to prepare some way of some kind of exit for Rooney that wasn't going to leave them too vastly out of pocket. The second thing was that the decision to drop him wasn't a purely tactical one. It was born out of the fact that supposedly Sir Alex was unhappy about his off-field lifestyle, specifically following the game at the weekend, that he basically just had enough at this point. I don't know if those are true. But yeah, the papers today are unanimously saying that that's it for Rue at Old Trafford.
I would be quite surprised if everybody has taken the same flyer all on the same day. Though one thing that does back that up is that everybody's got different figures. The fee seems to range between 20, 30, all the way up to 45 million, depending on which paper you read. There may be a certain amount of two add two going into this as well, given the status of the game from which he was dropped. But also I think the concerns about Rooney's lifestyle and fitness have been there for a long time, as has the the gradual deterioration in relationship between Ferguson and Rooney, you always suspected that even though Rooney got what he wanted in 2010, that Ferguson was going to note all of that down in a little black book and then smack Rooney around the head with it at some point in the not too distant future. So if he has dropped out of favour, I wouldn't expect there to be any kind of sentimentality there. He is 28 now.
28 in October.
Good. Everyone gets a birthday card on time from Sean.
I didn't get a card, Sean. What's that about?
I'll send you flowers next time.
It was your birthday the other day, wasn't it?
Was it, Sean?
Yeah, March the 4th, I share.
Happy birthday!
With Kenny Dalglish, thank you.
Sentimentality, plenty of lovely sentimentality, wasn't there, for Ronaldo? A lovely reception from Old Trafford from the crowd, no?
Yes, for the beginning at least. But also entertaining that they were then booing his every touch in an effort to put him off in the first few minutes. But I think that's got to be expected. I particularly like the way that they changed the running order on the public announcement before the game in order to read out the Manchester United players first, then Real Madrid, and then last of all with a build-up like a returning hero, which of course he was, Ronaldo's name was read out to try and blow his little mind, and given some of the touches he made in the first 10 minutes, maybe it worked.
Well, he did say, for the first time ever, an occasion has got to me. He said that. And Ryan Giggs gave him, because it was Ryan Giggs's 1,000th, it was very underreported this, but it was Ryan Giggs's 1,000th senior appearance. And he got his shirt signed by the entire Man United squad and gave it to Cristiano Ronaldo as a keepsake.
I think what nice? That's a lovely gesture.
Yeah.
But I think. A player as competitive as him, it won't mean anything after losing that game.
Ryan Giggs?
Right, that nature. And kind of going back to disappointments, I think the contrast between Rooney and Ronaldo had been kind of a double humiliation for Rooney on Tuesday. A, the fact that he didn't start the game in such a big game, and B, just when Ronaldo left Old Trafford, they were on a par, and all of a sudden Ronaldo's coming back, hero of the game, and also just how physically fit Ronaldo is when points are made about Rooney's fitness. Incredibly. Yeah. But the United trainer was saying he's the hardest trainer he ever met. And then when he's Old Trafford, then you can compare that with Rooney and Ferguson questioning his fitness as well.
He's like the T-3000 of football, isn't he, Cristiano Ronaldo?
Which one was the T-3000?
He was the really, really bad one. Wasn't it? Or was that the 2000? I'm not sure. But it was the one that could, you know, morph and stuff.
Not the woman one.
The Robert Patrick.
He was.
Yeah, because he's like a robot, but he's really creative as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
T-1000 was Arnie.
Arnie.
But, I mean, still a magnificent specimen.
Absolutely.
Hard to stop.
Hard to stop. More a Grant Holt type figure, whereas what we're talking about is
Definitely thinking of Robert Patrick.
I'm thinking of the Robert Patrick one. How could I not be? Hey, Sean, let's get the Spanish take, shall we?
Typical. Hello.
Hey!
You just ruined my bowl of cornflakes, you bastards.
How would we ruin your bowl of cornflakes?
Because there's nothing worse in the world than a bowl of soggy cornflakes, and I've just poured the milk into it.
Well, have them, Sid,
This bowl is lost.
No, it's not. Plus, a figure like
you... What do you mean? How is it not lost unless I carry on eating cornflakes now, which would be a really disgusting sound for you lot, me going in the background.
If you whack them in the freezer, that you might create some kind of stasis field around them, thus preserving their crunchivity.
Said Ian McIntosh, who joins us today.
That's worth a try.
The other thing is,
throwing away cornflakes is difficult. What do? You dip it down the sink or do you dip it in the bin?
No,
both are wrong.
No, you go for option three.
Which is what? Put it for a sieve first.
You put him in the toilet, for goodness sake, and then you flush. Really? What are you doing?
I tell you what, Jimbo.
Yeah.
You're a genius.
No, I've just, you know, had to get rid of things that are both liquid and solid before now. I find the toilet an ideal receptacle for that.
Well, I'll tell you what, I've just learned. That's brilliant. I'm almost going to let you off for ruining my nice bowl of cornflakes.
Okay.
What's happened, though, if Sid's wife just found a couple of flakes of cornflakes just floating around the top? She would assume
that I tipped a bowl of cornflakes down the
toilet. She might think he has digestion issues.
Well, that's also true. But it's
to be honest, she probably knows that already.
Yeah. Anyway.
The terrible thing is, I missed your first call, and I've been sitting in the kitchen thinking, no, I'm not going to put the milk on. There's no point. They're going to ring me any second now. Yeah. And I thought, you know what? Sod it. They're taking ages. I'm going to put the milk on now. Right. Literally just pour the milk in. Not even one mouthful of this delicious bowl of cornflakes.
Yeah. Sid, you raise an interesting question here, and you're a cornflake guy. That's
I find cornflakes quite boring, but cornflakes with raspberries in are brilliant.
Ooh, a little bit of a twist there. What's your breakfast cereal of choice, Tom?
I go between cornflakes, like I said, and Cheerios.
Cheerios?
Yeah, I'll alternate packets.
I don't eat cereal.
Oh, come on, everyone loves cereal. You might not eat it, but if you had your last meal and it was breakfast, what cereal would you have?
I don't know, porridge, I guess. Porridge with banana and raisins.
Okay. Yeah.
Or maybe some, can I say stir-fried, sort of some tofu?
No, you can't. I mean, the thing about cereal, I don't eat cereal now as much as I'd like to, but everyone remembers cereal from when they were a kid. It was like the best thing. And when you're a single guy, you know, on the days where, if we were single girls, probably do the same thing, you know. There's nothing better than a bowl of cereal around about 10 o'clock at night when
Jimbo,
no one's looking.
Jimbo,
yes?
this is so true. When we were kids, my mum went, right, I'm going to pop to the tube to pick up your dad coming home from work.
Yeah.
We all four of us would sprint downstairs going, cereal! And basically wolf down a bowl of Frosties while they were out so they wouldn't know.
You know what my favourite was?
Go on.
The variety ones, you know, with the boxes.
Yeah, but they were always too small.
They were, but it was just something about having
them. Bowls.
Yeah. Sorry, Ian, your favourite cereal?
I'm a Weetabix man.
Yeah.
But my daughter's into chocolate Cheerios and I'm turning. You know, I'm Cheerio curious.
There's also nothing in the world more messy than Weetabix.
Well,
yeah, you cannot take a Weetabix out of the packet without pouring Weetabix all over the side and little crunchy bits everywhere.
The after effect is terrible as well. It can weld itself to the bowl. You have to take it off with a blowtorch.
Yep, that's true as well. Can I just throw in my raisin splits here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, that advert really annoys me.
Oh, I don't know what advert
that is.
Because
it used to say, all wrapped up in a perfect square, totally unexpected to find it there. It's not unexpected, it's called raisin splits, for goodness sake. Of course I expect to find a raisin in there.
Right, yeah.
Stupid.
That is stupid, actually, you're right. Anyway, now, Sid, first question, was it a red card for Nanny? I know the Spanish press said no, it wasn't.
Yeah, most of the Spanish press said it wasn't. I mean, there were a couple of people kind of expressing doubts, and there were one or two relatively similar, although I think, for the most part, not particularly similar challenges held up against it. But most of them said no. For me, there's absolutely no way it's a red card.
Right. What did the Spanish press make of Mourinho's, I'll say this in 10 different languages, the best team lost business?
They thought he was right, but they took the assumption that we have done, well, I say we have done, obviously I live in Spain, but that you have done in England, which is that this was partly because it was Manchester United he was talking about, that his tone with United is always different, his tone with Ferguson is always different, and they did see that as probably, if not directly a come-and-get-me plea, although let's face it, it looked pretty much like one, as at very least conditioned by that idea in the back of his head that at some stage this might be the place he'd like to go.
All right, well, as you memorably put it, he's passed from whore to nun in 5 minutes now, or 8 days, in fact. Where does this leave his future after what was a pretty fine managerial job on Tuesday?
Well, funny you should say that, because one or two people in the Spanish press have been critical of him.
Ooh.
For the second change. I think virtually everybody thinks he got it dead right with Modric. He was about to put Benzema on, changed his mind, put Modric on. But there's a feeling that he got it wrong with the second change, where when they were winning, rather than keeping the ball and continuing to play, he put Pepe on and tried to protect himself. Now, of course, it's true that United needed two goals, so maybe it's not such a bad decision. But it was then that United started making chances again. And again, of course, it's true. We don't know if United made chances because of the Pepe decision or because of something else. Now, as I say, that, I think, tells you something about the position Mourinho's in with the Spanish media. The fact that even after a big victory at Old Trafford, that even after these 8 days when he's been brilliant, there are still people saying, yeah, but look at the second change. And I think, personally think that's a little bit mealy-mouthed. It's a little bit over the top. After two Barcelona games, if you go through Marca, which, of course, is the best-selling newspaper in Spain, and after a game like that, there might be, in the first 12 pages, what, maybe 15, 16 headlines of one sort or another to do with various different things. Not one of them dedicated to Mourinho. And then after this game, not one dedicated to Mourinho as well. So at a time when they could have been saying, look at this, what a good manager, they didn't take the opportunity. All of that leads into your question, which is to say, how does this change his future? It doesn't, except that it makes the exit less painful and easier to make happen.
Mm. All right, then. And as for exits, of course, Real could well be, by this time next week, the only Spanish club left in Europe.
Well, they could be, although Malaga are only 1-0 down.
Yeah.
Barcelona, obviously, all the talk is about whether or not they can come back. I mean, I think it'll be very difficult because I think they'll probably concede. But yeah, you're right. There's a very good chance of that. And the only team left in the Europa League would be Levante, depending on what happens tonight.
Mm. Well, Levante, of course, are taking on Rubin Kazan, who knocked out the holders already.
So. Yeah, and Rubin Kazan, who are also quite a Spanish team. I think they've got something like, I think it's four Spanish players and a couple of Spanish members of the technical staff as well.
Really? Well, I'm way out of my depth in Europa League knowledge here. So I'm just going to move back onto Valencia, who did get knocked out after that 1-1 draw at Paris Saint-Germain.
Yeah, and the thing that gets me about this is that afterwards everyone said, oh, well, that was good. It wasn't good. It was good in that they had the ball. It was good in that they had territorial advantage, but they never really created very much from my point of view. It felt to me like there was no real urge to do it. And it feels to me, there's a phrase that's used in Spanish a lot, which is conformismo, which is, you know, effectively to accept things as they are. And I think there was a real conformismo, not just about Valencia, but about the reaction to Valencia afterwards, partly because what we saw was the reality. Valencia are not a good enough team to go very far in the Champions League.
All right, Sid. Well, we reckon by our estimation, your cornflakes should be just about soggy enough now, so we'll let you go back to those.
No, they're ruined. I'm going to have to pour out a whole new bowl.
Wow. All right, Sid. Well, listen, enjoy those crispy flakes of corn when the second time around. And many thanks for that. We'll catch up with you on Monday.
Okay, Doug. Switch it in.
Thanks, Sid. And with that, we come to the end of part one. Very, very shortly, a little bit more on the Champions League and your posts and tweets and other stuff.
This week on the Guardian Audio Edition, the Norwegian prison where inmates are treated like people. A day at Gladstone Primary, the school where they speak 20 languages. And in our audio book review, we explore the world of work with Dave Egger's latest novel, A Hologram for the King, and Oliver James's examination of duplicity and double dealing, Office Politics. To subscribe for free to the Guardian Audio Edition, go to audible.co.uk/Guardian or find us on SoundCloud, iTunes and Audioboo. The Guardian Audio Edition, a new way to get the whole picture.
Part two, and this just in, producer Ben's just got a piece of paper placed in my hands pointing out that actually T-1000 was the Robert Patrick one. The Schwarzenegger model was actually the rather underwhelmingly named T-800. To feel that Skynet's marketing department, they dropped the ball a little bit with the T-800.
800 just isn't an exciting number. That makes them sound like a 486 PC.
Exactly.
There's
exactly
nothing there.
Which has now been completely terminated by the...
Skynet ruled it out sometime around 1997.
Oh, hang on, here's another piece of paper. Crikey. Joe Cole has admitted he was wrong to move to Liverpool in other news, but could not bear the thought of signing for Spurs. How about that, huh? Yeah. It's interesting. It's a very frank interview by Joe, where he said, yeah, I did say they were the biggest club in England, because that's only because the press officer said, they're the biggest club in Europe, Joe, look what they've won. And I said, well, yeah, I suppose when you put it that way. And then, of course, they stuck it up on their website, and I couldn't say no. And that's how it works, Sean, that's how it works. Right, now, moving along, lovely to hear from Sid there, and mentioned Valencia, their exit, Juventus, no big surprises there. You're frowning already,
Sean.
No,
I'm saying perhaps Juventus, I was going to ask you, do you think they've had enough credit? Because they've been beaten in the last 18 European matches, I think, I was reading.
Last team to beat them was Fulham at Craven Cottage, 3 years ago in the Europa League, and a cracking match, what was that, 4-3? Amazing game.
And they seem to be flying a little bit under the radar. People have talked a lot about,
isn't it?
I mean, Dortmund and Bayern and obviously Madrid.
They're a bit of a T series, I'm not sure which, and they're kind of, you know, ruthless clinical execution. You know, you give them a chance and they take it. And of course, everyone changing trousers after Pirlo's wonderful pass for the second goal. That was a lovely noise you just made in.
What I like about it, following on from Ian's is that Juventus keep clean sheets. I trust their defence.
We'll move on.
I trust their defence. I'm not sure I could say that about some of the other teams.
And yet they were playing one of the weaker teams, with all due respect to Celtic, one of the weaker teams in the last 16, and they were, in terms of possession, largely dominated, certainly in the first game, by the Scots. So you maybe worry about that from Juve's point of view, and whether they really are contenders to go all the way.
Well, it was quite interesting because obviously Celtic needed four, but they had three excellent chances to score before half time. They forced, and they always had three men in Juventus's half, sometimes even more. They were really pushing up, much more ambitious than you generally think of Celtic in Europe, but Juventus didn't even waver for a moment.
Well, a wonderful reaction, say, from Gigi Buffon.
It was incredible, wasn't it?
Gordon Banks-esque.
Oh, oof. Yeah.
Oof. Oof. Tom?
I think what was good about it for Juve was that first leg was kind of overshadowed by the controversy about who was pulling who and what have you. But last night was just a clinical performance, and without doubt they're the superior team.
Now, the other teams through to the quarterfinals are, of course, Borussia Dortmund, who after that 2-2 away at the Donbass Arena just dealt with Shakhtar Donetsk without any bother this time around. Is that right, Ian?
Very much so. Once you cede control of the midfield to Bender, who's playing through the pain, through Gündoğan, who can split a defence like Xabi Alonso, that's it, you're done. Because the three men in front of them, Marco Reus and Mario Götze, and the man whose name I could never pronounce.
Blazkowski?
Yeah, that sounds about right. Let's go with that. That sounds safe.
That's right, yeah, Sean's nodding. Got that.
Once they're released, you've got Lewandowski as well, this cultured pivot at the front. He only needs 2 seconds on the ball. Everyone's around him, and he's intelligent enough to find them. They are a really good team.
Mm. Excellent. Do you feel like they have the potential to go all the way?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, we are talking about competition with all due respect that Chelsea won with a heroic rearguard action. So we always fall into the trap of thinking the biggest European name, the most on-form team has to win it. But they have everything in their arsenal that they need.
Absolutely.
I think it says quite a lot for the Bundesliga that they're so far behind Bayern in the league. And yet at the Champions League, they're, you know, looking really, really good as well.
Although that can happen. You can be good in Europe. I mean, look at Real Madrid.
Chelsea last year. But then again, they didn't look that good last year and won it.
Yeah, interesting. Who's your tip, Sean?
Well, I did back Dortmund at 25-1, stupidly actually, but about just at the end of last season. And then, of course, when the draw for the group stage were made, they went out to 40-1. So I £40 each way on them. So I'll win if they win the whole thing. I'll win well over grand. So fingers crossed.
But each way means even if they lose,
if they
the
get
final.
To the final, if they get to the final, I'll still win some money. And I've also backed Juventus at 14-1. So they're my two against the field. So fingers crossed.
Right, kids. By the way, don't try this at home. It's not as easy as it looks. Now, excellent. We'll move on. Tweets and posts. Oh, here's Andrew Thomas, a.k.a. Twisted Blood, who says, guys, saw the Champions League, 4 games in the Championship are being contested by 8 teams, all beginning with the letter B. This is huge. It's absolutely right. Tuesday night was quite an extraordinary combination of circumstances. Bolton took on Blackburn and beat them 1-0. Bristol City played Brighton and it was 0-0. Burnley played Barnsley and it was 1-1. And of course, as you know so well, Tom, Birmingham played Blackpool. And how do you feel about the result there?
Neutral.
It was 1-1. It was 1-1. That's quite extraordinary. I don't know what the odds on that happening are. Quite high, perhaps, because there's so many teams beginning with B. I'll move on, hey. Celebrations. We had a big thing about non-celebrations annoying. A 16th Beatles getting upset about Bale's celebration, which is a little bit over the top. Le Gaffe. Says my least favourite celebration came this season courtesy of Theo Walcott. After the tedious saga with his contract talks, he had the audacity to celebrate scoring a goal by pretending to sign on the dotted line. And then he says a rude word. Obliteron responds, how about players who point at their name? First guy I saw do that was Raul. And of course there was a classic example from Nathan Dyer in the Swansea League Cup final thing. Yeah. Is there something that gets your goat celebrating a goal-wise?
Nothing's really hurt my spirit as much as Robbie Keane's forward roll and 1930s Tommy Machine Gun celebration.
Machine guns in general, I'm thinking, are a no-no.
It's not a great message to send out to impressionable kids.
Absolutely.
I don't think anything. There are more important things in the world to be bothered about, aren't there?
Come on, pointing at the name on your back of your jersey, that's a bit silly, isn't it?
But footballers do far worse, though. I
mean, do they? Well,
you hang about footballers, you know what they're like.
They're incorrigible. Yeah. Tom, how about you?
I just feel sorry for players who get, like Bale, who get into the habit where they do the same one over and over again. Now he's stuck in this cycle, and I think he's scared to break free of it.
Right.
So I want him to be brave and try something different.
Actually, producer Ben, who's in a very contrarian mood today, has now said, what about Ravanelli with the whole shirt over the head thing? That ushered in an entire genre of celebrations and cheeky shirt-lifting puns as well. Lee Sharp, collar up Elvis now counts as producer Ben. He's on a roll. Anyway, a little bit of listeners cleaning up after us following Monday's show. El Popper, because of course I was mentioning Kieran Dyer got all excited and said it was his first goal for 6 years. The thing was, somebody said that it was, and I got so excited by that I forgot to check, and it wasn't. He'd actually scored 2 months before. El Popper, among the many people pointing out that I was completely wrong on that, sorry. Malcolm Higgins says, to follow up on last Football Weekly pod, Clasico was shown in Taiwan instead of an EPL game. I was saying about, you know, which in Asian markets with the red, who apparently in Taiwan it was very much Clasico. Yeah. And Ad Hoc says, I'm rather appalled to hear Philippe Auclair refer to Gigi Becali as a great character. He's an outspoken and this is Becali, not Philippe Auclair, provides lots of copy for journalists, but he's an awful, vile, disgusting, dyed-in-the-wool racist. I think he was talking about Bacardi, I'm not sure. The Crazy 58 says managers don't speak their team's language, but maybe are a little bit hampered by that. It doesn't matter in Japan because loads of them have done really, really well. I mean, I could list them if you want. Do you want me to list them? Zaccaroni won the Asia Cup. Philippe Troussier won the Asia Cup and took the team to runner-up place in the Confederations Cup in 2001. No, that wasn't too bad, was it? And now we're on to part three. Well, after this. Part three. Tom, I'm right in thinking this is your favourite part of the show, isn't it?
Every week my favourite part, yeah.
Excellent. Okay. This one's going to be a special one, isn't it, Sean? Packed with FA Cup quarter-finals and a very, very big game. It's the third place versus eighth place playoff in the Premier League.
Are you belittling Liverpool v Spurs?
I'm certainly not.
I think you are.
I'm not. I just said it's the third place versus eighth place playoff.
It's the game of the weekend, surely.
Well, it depends who you support, really.
Apart from
if you were a Reading or an Aston Villa
Manchester
fan,
United,
you'd be getting all hot
Chelsea.
About that. Or, yeah, you go again with the big FA Cup thing. Excellent. Who's your tip for Man United, Chelsea?
I think United.
All right. What about the other FA Cup games? We'll do them before we come on to your Liverpool-Spurs thing, eh? You've got a clash of former winners of the of this venerable competition at the Etihad. Manchester City, who won in 2011. Barnsley, who won in 1912. Barnsley, they've had cup runs of late, though, haven't they?
They have. It's only a few years ago they got all the way to the semis, wasn't it?
Exactly right, beating Chelsea and Liverpool. On the way,
yes.
A little bit of research reveals.
And Michael Parkinson in the studio being very, very sensible about a poor refereeing decision. He was pressed on it as a Barnsley fan, who for some reason was in the studio at the time, and asked to be suitably outraged as people were about the Manchester United game. And he said, when are we going to get to a point where we just stop talking about the referee? They don't do it in any other sport. Let's not do it in football. A wish which has not been granted to Parky.
Terrible. Why? Wise words there. So, Sean, going back to your 24 grand, because apparently it's 24 grand and the missing three was yours. So, we've got Chelsea to beat Man United.
So Chelsea to beat Man United is, let me get this right, they are just under 4-1.
Okay, what's Barnsley to beat City away then?
20-1.
Yes. Only 20-1?
Yeah.
Wow. All right.
Wigan is just over 7-1.
They've got to beat Everton away.
Yep. And then Blackburn are sort of just over 2-1.
To win at the new Den against Millwall. See, the other ones I can just about see happening, that even Barnsley City, because it's a crazy season, you know, we've seen recently with Bradford in the League Cup final, but Wigan, who are in the middle of a relegation battle, heading off to Goodison Park, surely...
Well, don't know what kind of team they're going to be putting
you
out.
You kind
as well.
Of do, though, don't you?
Martinez has said he's going to rest players.
He's going to experiment.
Yeah, he said he's not resting players, he's giving other players an opportunity. Yep. But they all just happen to be the reserve team players.
So I'm not so sure about that, but hey, you can't argue with 24 grand.
Well, the alternative is to back all four home teams to win, and then you're 10 or win your 60 quid, roughly.
Oh, that's no fun. Talk me through Barnsley's chances, anyone, of pulling off a massive upset at City?
Well, City have got a few players missing companies out. I think Aguero and Rodwell, which a bit of a concern, seeing as he seemed to have recovered from all those injury problems, and he went off the other day and looked quite upset as he went off. But Barnsley aren't doing particularly well in the league, and it's the same as Chelsea, Man United as well. Man City, that's, you know, their chance for a trophy this
Absolutely.
Season there. So
they've got Rory Delap, of course, these days, Barnsley. Their manager, David Flitcroft, insists he's faced bigger games than this one before, although he's only been in charge of them for, 14 matches, I think it is? They're 21st in the Championship, so like Wigan, they have their own, you know, they have other things perhaps on their mind, but what an extraordinary thing that would be if they were to pull that one off.
It would, but wouldn't it upset you as a Barnsley fan if they went and did that after a whole season spent down in the bottom reaches of the table? You'd be livid.
They were doing pretty badly the last run they went on.
Yes.
Yeah, they were kind of in a similar situation last time. It's the magic of the cup.
It is very much the magic of the cup. What about Millwall Blackburn? Michael Appleton with his third different club in this year's competition, of course.
I mean, if there's going to be a surprise, and it would only be a minor surprise, I think Blackburn beating Millwall would be the one. I mean, both teams are in shocking form. I think Millwall have won one and lost five of their last six, while Blackburn have drawn two and lost four of their last six in the league as well. So it's a pick 'em game. But there might be, I think Blackburn might be slightly better. I mean, they're both mid-table teams. They're both, I think, one's 13th, one's 15th.
Right. Blackburn got to this point by beating Arsenal. Millwall came through against Luton. So...
It wasn't, and I mean, they didn't impress me particularly against Luton. They did what they had to do. Luton made a couple of mistakes, I'd slightly favour Blackburn. I don't really have any strong opinion on that.
I was covering the Arsenal-Blackburn game, and Blackburn were genuinely impressive. Not so much in going forward, which I think they only did twice in the entire 90 minutes, but their solidity at the back. They looked really organised and cohesive and determined and completely different from any Blackburn team we've seen since Sam Allardyce left, which is why it's a surprise they haven't managed to transfer that into the league and make a concerted push for the playoffs. But I think Millwall were beaten by Wolves, weren't they, in midweek?
Yeah.
So yeah, I'd fancy a couple of quid on Blackburn there.
Blackburn currently 13th in the Championship, and following that defeat at home to Peterborough on Tuesday. Now, in the meantime, there's also, of course, the Premier League this weekend. Only the six matches, some sizzling ones down at the bottom end of the table, where you have QPR taking on Sunderland. Sunderland are kind of in the mix. They're only 6 points away, so defeat here. And QPR, you know, fresh from that Saints win.
They've got a fairly nice run in QPR as well.
Yep.
And it's whether they can use that result against Southampton last week as kind of a springboard to... Because I think Harry said they needed to win six of their last 10 games, which sounded pretty hard, but...
Well, if they can win away at Saints, you know, they should be able to... They should, no? Be able to get
Well, I mean, it's worth pointing out they have only won two of their last 15 at home, QPR,
yeah,
so...
There is that. Yeah. Hmm. What do you think, Sean?
It's very tough to call. I think Sunderland, on the odds, it would be slight value, but it wouldn't be something I'd be sticking a lot of money on.
What does that mean you actually think?
I wouldn't be surprised if it was a draw.
Okay.
But I think Sunderland, the prices are better.
Ian, your call?
I would expect Sunderland to just block it out. I'll go for the fabled no goal scorer bet. Slightly better odds than 0-0.
Okay, nice one. And what about Reading Aston Villa? Terrifically exciting news. Or stories midweek that Justin Bieber was going to buy Aston Villa.
This is another Villa celebrity fan. You got David Cameron, Tom Hanks. He was the one that cropped up the other day. Why is he buying Villa?
I don't know. I don't think he is, sadly, but in an ideal world he would be.
Could he afford? If you didn't know anything about football, it would sound a bit exotic.
That's what Tom Hanks said. Someone wrote into the Fiver and said it's probably just because... They're quite close. When you look at Premier League clubs in alphabetical order, they're quite close to the top. So if you're just going through and you don't want to pick the first one, so you look, you know nothing. So, Villa, I'll choose.
It's like ordering on a wine list in the restaurant.
Yeah. And anybody who's ever been to Aston will know it's similarly exotic.
Well, anyway, Justin Bieber, in the meantime, they are taking on Reading. It's a huge game, that. It's third last against second last.
Absolutely. And I think Reading... I think they're the favourites to go down this season. I think they need to win. You talk about QPR needs going around. I think Reading, especially after last week where they were very poor, and they're poor against Wigan as well. I think they need to win the game.
A lot of talk about QPR and that booze-filled trip to Dubai and how it played havoc with their chances, and then of course they ruined the narrative by winning at Saints. But actually, Reading, who were also on the same trip, pretty much. And Reading are the team who's, before that, they'd won, I think, 4 out of 5 or something. And after that, zippo.
Maybe they weren't going to the right bar.
Perhaps so. Maybe they just weren't going out enough. Maybe they actually went there and trained or something dumb like that.
Yeah, more than an hour and a half every day. What were they thinking?
Yeah. Well, there you go. It all looks good for Villa then. Are we prognosticating some kind of Villa away success at Medeski Stadium? No, we're not. Tom?
I mean, they only just lost to City, and it was one individual error, and possibly Clark was fouled by Dzeko in the build-up to the goal. Yeah, he kind of leant on him a bit. The other thing for Reading is their running is horrible. They've got to play United, Arsenal, Liverpool and City, four of their last 10 games. So, you know, this is one for them to win. And at home, where they've been kind of almost acceptable this season as well.
Who, Reading?
Yeah.
Well, except their last game. Did they not lose... Was it to Wigan that they lost at home to Wigan?
But overall, like earlier in the season.
Yeah, but post Dubai, that's the paradigm I'm looking at.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we've all got to think about post Dubai.
Right. Good. And we haven't mentioned West Brom and Swansea, and, you know, you can understand why, although I'm sure it'll be a lovely game in that. Newcastle Stoke, similarly. But Liverpool Spurs, that's what's rearing its head on our fixture list. Sean, this is the game.
It is. I'm really looking forward to it. I mean, Spurs have got a tricky few games coming up, and this one isn't easy. I mean, Spurs' away record, though, is actually quite good. They've won, I think, 8 and drawn 3 of their last 15 away. Exactly the same record as Liverpool's last 15 at home. Spurs are better than 3-1 to win this without going overly bad. And I think that, so your makers suggest they have less than a 25% chance of winning. And I think it's probably a bit higher than that, given how they're playing.
Beyond the numbers, though, Sean, Gareth Bale, of course, in terrific form. They have got a Thursday night game at home to Inter in the Europa League. So that might tire them and he a little bit. But Liverpool equally have been showing good form of late.
Yeah, they have. And I think, you know, Brendan Rodgers has been widely mocked. But actually, there's some promising signs, particularly now Suarez has a partner alongside
Coutinho.
Him. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, Sturridge is meant to be back fit for this one, but the way that Coutinho's been playing with Suarez, you'd feel a bit strange about dicking with that, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. You don't really want to change a winning team after they've just pulled someone's pants down, as they did last week. And this is a really important barometer for Liverpool, because they've proven that they're good against the weak teams and against the weakened teams in terms of Swansea. But they haven't had, I don't think, any results against what you might...
But still yet to beat a top 10 team apart from Swansea.
And Swansea's reserves. So Brendan Rodgers is in an interesting position. He's kind of on a seesaw at the moment as how his season is seen. It should be a transitional season. It shouldn't be taken as any more than that. But a nice late run will build them up full of confidence and set them up nicely for next season. But until he starts winning games like this, there's always going to be a sizable group of Liverpool fans who are unsure. And because of the way that he speaks, which I don't think is entirely contrived, I think he's trying to be this inspirational Shankly light Liverpool manager, but because of the way he does that, he does get widely mocked. And until he's got the results to back up the lovely flowery stuff he's saying, he's always going to be a little bit in danger, I think.
It was a big win for them, for Spurs, against Arsenal at the weekend. But to be fair, if you take away the absolutely grotesque defending from Arsenal, Spurs weren't that much better. And would it be right to assume that Liverpool will be a little bit more canny at the back? And with Suarez and Coutinho, possess the necessary firepower to actually make use of their possession up front, i.e. do the exact things that Arsenal didn't do against Spurs?
That's a reasonable, you know, but I think Ian's point is absolutely right. Until Liverpool start doing it regularly against these top 10 sides, then, you know, people will regard them as flat-track bullies. They can, you know, they can put in some very oppressive performances. They, you know, they scored, how many times have they scored 5 goals this season? 3 times? But they haven't yet, you know, performed consistently well against the big sides across the 90 minutes.
Tom?
Yeah, were they that good against Wigan? I know it was 4-0, but I thought the scoreline flattered them, and Wigan had a few chances in that game early on as well. I mean, Suarez, we talk about Bale, but Suarez has been so, so good this season. And that game against Zenit, he was amazing. And you talk about Bale's free kicks, but Suarez scored 2 superb goals in that season. I think he's on a par with Bale this season.
Well, Suarez currently top of the scoring charts in the Premier League. Yeah. Bale's not so far off either. He's on 16. I think Suarez on 21, with a little Robin van Persie nestling between the pair of them. Quite an exciting little trio there. So we're quite the match, that one there at Anfield. Magnificent. That is something we'll be looking back on Monday's pod. In the meantime, there'll be a Friday review of the Champions League action and a little bit more from the continent up on Friday morning. So hopefully you'll join me for that. But that's it for today's Football Weekly Extra. So many thanks to Tom Lutz, to Sean Ingall, and to Ian McIntosh. Great to have you on board, Ian.
Thank you for having me.
And producer Ben, and you listeners, have a super weekend. See you on Monday.